Welcome to the Financial Management Magazine podcast series, a service of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants. This series features discussions with chartered global management accountants and other experts about the topics, trends and technologies that are transforming the accounting profession.
Is it possible to balance personal and professional aspirations? Sure, we all have interests outside of our jobs, but what if those personal aspirations involve making it to the Olympics? I'm Neil Amato, a senior editor with FM Magazine. In this podcast episode, Joe Hunter talks about balancing professional and personal goals. Joe is a part-time finance manager for GlaxoSmithKline in the UK. She holds the Chartered Global Management Accountant designation, and she's also striving to be part of the Olympic team for Great Britain in the sport of hockey. Thank you, Joe, for being on the podcast.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Let's first talk about the experience of playing in the Hockey World Cup over the summer. I guess you got to play for your country.
Yeah, so we had the Vitality Hockey Women's World Cup in London, in England, in the summer. So for me, so I represented England in that, and it was certainly up there with one of the best sporting achievements and events that I've ever been involved with. For us in England, to play in front of a home crowd for one is absolutely incredible. But not only that, we had 10,000 plus fans in the stadium. So running out before our first match was something I've never, ever experienced before. And something that when I was growing up didn't actually almost exist. That fan base for hockey wasn't like that when I was younger. But following the girls' success at the Rio Olympics, where they won gold as Great Britain, the popularity of hockey in England has grown and grown, and the World Cup crowds were testament to that, really. So to run out and play in front of those crowds was absolutely amazing, and certainly one of the proudest moments in my hockey career.
Is it fair to say that most of the times you've played hockey in your career, there's probably been no other, you know, spectators other than maybe parents and siblings?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. So certainly when I was playing as a youngster, your parents are your number one fans, and that was certainly the case for myself when I was growing up. You normally get a few dogs on the sideline as well, with the owners taking their dogs for a walk and they stumble across the hockey pitch. But yeah, the fan base certainly when I was younger was a lot smaller. It generally consisted of close family and friends watching. As I grew up, the crowds got a bit bigger. I'm very lucky that I get to play across the world. And in certain countries, the hockey's actually really quite popular. So I've played a lot in Holland, for example. And you generally get good crowds there because hockey's one of their nation's popular sports. But yeah, certainly in terms of consistency, the hockey fans, crowds, sorry, aren't necessarily huge. So the World Cup really, really capitalized on that.
So we've talked a little bit about your recent past with the sport, but what about your future goals with hockey? What are some of those?
So my 100% my aspiration with hockey is to play in the Olympic Games. So the next Olympic Games is Tokyo 2020, and we will be competing as Great Britain there. So I currently train in a squad of 26 Great Britain athletes. And the Olympics, yes, it's not that far away at all. 2 years, in fact, less than that. So that's my ultimate aim, sort of longer term. Between now and then, we've got various tournaments and matches that are going on. We've got the European Championships next year, which take place in Belgium. We also have the FIH Pro League, which starts next year. That's a new home and away league that's been designed, and that will be played. There's eight nations involved in the league. You play each country twice, once at home and once away. So that's going to involve a lot more travel, but more importantly, it's going to involve more competitive games in front of home crowds, which again, we hope to replicate the feeling around the World Cup that we got in terms of support. Yeah, so longer term, it's the Olympics, but between now and then, I want to play as much as possible for my country. between now and then.
Now, does the national team need to qualify to get to the Olympics?
Yes, we do, yes. So next year, the Olympic qualification starts. It is an incredibly complicated structure, which I'm not going to try to explain verbally. There's a couple of different ways you can qualify. The easiest way to qualify is by winning your continental tournament, so for us, the European Championships. Another route to qualify is the FIH Pro League, which I've spoken to. But to be honest, it's so complicated that I couldn't actually tell you exactly how. But in essence, next year is a really, really important year because the Olympic qualification really depends on how successful we are then. And as I say, that there's kind of two or three different routes. So if you're not successful in one, that's not the end of the road. But it's a very, very important year for us. So
let's go back a little bit. How did you pick up the sport? How old were you? What other sports were you maybe playing, or did you try first?
I started hockey at the age of 8. I was quite simply at my school, and a local hockey coach came in and did a taster session, and I absolutely loved it. I straight away went home to my parents, said I want to go and join the local club. So that's what I did, and that's how hockey started for me. So 8, so about almost 20 years ago now, which seems alarming. But I think like most sporty kids, I wasn't just restricted to that one sport. I loved playing everything. Another particular highlight for me growing up was my athletics career. So I competed at a county level in the 800 metres, sort of, I don't know, the age of kind of 15, 16. So those two are the sports that I excelled at. I also kind of played tennis, netball, you name it. I tried my hand at everything. But athletics and hockey is what I excelled at. The reason hockey kind of tipped the balance for me is because I got called up to the England junior team at the age of 15. So naturally, I kind of took a step forward earlier in my life with hockey. I also love the team aspect of the sport, so for me that was something that was very, very important, and hockey certainly offered that for me versus athletics. But I think certainly for any kid or children growing up, playing as many sports as possible is only a good thing. You don't want to specialise too early because they all aid each other in some way. I really put down a lot of my success in hockey to my success or my training growing up in athletics, my ability to run, get up and down the pitch, to run at high speed, things like that. So they certainly all aid each other, and I'm glad I didn't specialize too early in just hockey.
We'll come back to that that team aspect that you mentioned in a little bit. Speaking of, I guess, kind of athletics, I saw a video from, I think it was Warminster School, which I guess invited you to the opening ceremony for their field. I guess that was a hockey demonstration, but you also have attended some youth events such as a park run, something like that. Why are those important to you?
As a GB team, we have a vision, and that vision is to be the difference, create history, and inspire the future. We take this very, very seriously within our team. We talk about it a lot, and it's something that every single individual, so all 26 of us in that squad, aspire to do every single day. And inspire the future, it kind of sums up what you've sort of spoken about. Inspire the future for us is about inspiring any kid, young boy, young girl, adults, to not just play hockey necessarily, but to get active, to be involved with sport, and if we can inspire them in any single way, for us that gives us a great sense of pride, because ultimately we do the sport because we love it, but we really, really value inspiring the future and seeing that future come through. And initiatives like going to Warminster School, which is a school in England, and opening their pitch, you just get access to all these kids, and the enthusiasm that you see, it's just so valuable. And actually, if I look back and put myself in their shoes, when I was about 10 years old, I think it was, I remember an England player, he was in the men's team back then, he came and did a training session with me. And I thought that was the most amazing thing ever. I just met an international hockey player who'd been to the Olympics. And if I can just give even an ounce of that back to the younger generations, and as I said, not just the younger generations, also adults who play sport, then I think that's completely invaluable, really.
So I'm going to switch over to academics for a while, I guess. Did I read correctly that at university you studied chemistry?
I did. I studied chemistry at the University of Nottingham. So I did a 3-year degree there, which is obviously very different to what I find myself in now. I really enjoyed science at school. I think back at the age of kind of 16, 17, 18, it is difficult to know exactly what you want to go into. So I chose to do something that I enjoyed at the time. And I studied chemistry at university.
So how did you get interested in management accounting?
So when I was doing my chemistry degree, I tried really hard to do quite a lot of work experience in that field because, as I said, I wasn't too sure exactly what I wanted to do. I was fortunate enough that I did do several placements, predominantly in labs. Turns out I didn't actually enjoy it hugely, which is actually, I think, one of the most valuable reasons for doing work experience. Not only do you find out what you do like and might want to do, you also find out what you don't necessarily like. So that kind of achieved the latter for me when I was doing that work experience. And I was speaking to a friend who was studying economics at a different university in the country, and she had mentioned that she was looking into management accountancy. And back then I didn't really have much knowledge of it, being in the science sector and studying in chemistry. I'd kind of focused quite heavily on science rather than other career options necessarily. So I spoke to her and did my research, and it was only then that I realised what opportunities CIMA could afford me and going into management accountancy. And the opportunities almost felt endless to me. So I applied to do a graduate scheme at GlaxoSmithKline, and they supported me to do my CIMA exams once I was successful in the application.
So you're working part-time still for GlaxoSmithKline?
I do, yes. So I work 1.5 days a week for GSK. I spend the other 3.5 days a week training with the GB squad. So I go into work all day on a Wednesday, and then I work half a day throughout the week around my training. They, as employers, have been unbelievable. I joined the company in 2014, and I joined on a full-time basis back then when I started the graduate program. I did 2 years of full-time work. I then got invited to trial with the GB hockey team, and I was asked to join the hockey team on a part-time basis. I immediately went and had conversations with my manager, who was incredibly supportive, really encouraged me to go for it, and kind of said, don't you worry, we'll sort something out here. So at that point, I reduced my hours at GSK from 5 days to 3 days a week. And hockey went from strength to strength. I got asked to join the GB squad on a full-time basis, at which point I had to go back to my new manager at this point. I'd changed roles within that time period and kind of discussed the options, see if they were willing to support me. And lo and behold, they were. They, again, exact same attitude, really positive, incredibly supportive, encouraged me to go for that opportunity, and they allowed me to reduce my hours to 1.5 days a week.
What has that balancing of things taught you? I have a few topics I want to go into, but first about just being able to be productive in a shorter amount of time.
What I found, I think more so from doing the jump from 3 days to 1.5 days, is that my productivity levels have increased. So quite simply, because I know I have such limited time, it means that I seriously plan my day, or my day and a half in the office. My meetings go in the calendar early. I communicate with all my stakeholders that I'm only in for certain days. They appreciate that, and again, are supportive. So because I know that I'm in for such little time, as I say, my productivity increases, you know that you kind of get your head in the right frame of mind to go in, work hard, be efficient, and then I go away to the office again and play hockey. I think the two support each other in that as well. When I'm on the hockey pitch, I realise how fortunate I am to be able to do that. I don't know how many people have the chance or opportunity to play sport as part of their job. So when I'm on that hockey pitch, it's the best thing ever. Equally, when I then flip to work, it's also the best thing ever because it gives me that break from hockey. It gives me a different mental stimulus, and I just really enjoy the two. And I think because I constantly have that reminder and that refreshment of the two different environments, it does just make me more productive when I'm at work in the office.
So you mentioned the team aspect early as something that attracted you to the sport. How do you think that helps you and also just people who have played team sports in general in the rest of their lives?
Hugely, absolutely hugely. Team sports, there's so much it has to offer. I, for one, just collaboration and working together. Ultimately, in hockey and any team sport, we're all working towards the same goal. We're all working towards winning the next game, winning the next tournament, ultimately for us, winning that gold medal at the Olympic Games. So the collaboration on that is huge because you've got different people in different positions who offer different skill sets. So it's working out how we get the best out of each individual on that pitch. And a lot of that comes with the coach. We do a lot of sort of video analysis together, but one of the most important things, I believe, is the communication. And that's something that you can relate to all walks of life. So the ability to communicate with different people, to get your opinions across, and to work to solutions with those people is integral to the success of a team sport. And they are skills that I'm sure you can easily understand translate directly into the workplace.
Besides teamwork and communication, any other lessons that maybe you've learned over the years as an athlete that you've been able to apply to your work?
Again, lots and lots of lessons. So my journey in hockey hasn't all been plain sailing. There have been some serious ups and some serious downs. For example, I trialled for the GB team straight after the London Olympics, so after 2012. I trialled, I thought I did an okay job, but I didn't get asked to join the team. So straight away I thought, okay, this is a big setback, but actually this will not change what I want to achieve. So 4 years down the line, I spent that 4 years, I moved to the best hockey club I could do, I did extra sessions by myself, got myself in the best possible position, and I actually emailed the head coach as we got close to the Rio Olympics in 2016 to ask if I could trial following the games, at which point he invited me to trial, and at that point I then got asked to join the squad. So for me, that sums up one of the biggest lessons, which is you're going to have setbacks. And you'll certainly have setbacks in the workplace. It may be that you don't excel as quickly as you had hoped. It may be that you don't necessarily get the promotion or the job that you've applied for, but that's no reason to stop striving for that. And that's something that I certainly, an attitude that I take into work whenever I'm there. If you want something and you have a clear plan of where you want to get to, keep striving for it. The journey itself might not necessarily take the direction that you hope or you plan, but any setback, I kind of view it as, is just a bit of a diversion. You just have to take a different route to get there.
You mentioned earlier about the FIH Pro League, and I guess there's also upcoming the launch of the European Hockey League for women in 2020. Tell me some about what that means for you and for sport in general, that there are more of those opportunities.
The FIH Pro League, which starts next year, is, in my opinion, a really good step forward for hockey. it is an opportunity for the nations involved, so there's both the men's and the women's league, to play the sport at home in front of home crowds, which ultimately the hope is it puts hockey even more on the map for those nations. For Great Britain in general, the uptake and interest in hockey following the Rio Olympics was huge, and we want to continue that, and we want to grow it even more. So the opportunity to be able to play regularly each year at home in front of British crowds is great. And the hope also, as I alluded to earlier, is we want to inspire the future. We want to inspire those hockey fans, and we want them to ultimately be wearing the shirts that we're wearing on that pitch one day. But also, it's good that we're moving towards becoming more professional in the sport. So the sport hockey in England, we rely on lottery funding and UK Sport. And we're very, very fortunate that we get that, and it allows us to train full-time during the working day, and we get supported financially for that. However, it's not necessarily, it might not last forever. The way our funding is structured is it's linked to your success at the Olympic Games. So, if I put it quite simply, if you do well at Olympics, you will keep your funding. If you do badly at Olympics, you may be at risk of losing your funding. And also, Olympic sports are changing, as we see each 4 years. They introduce new sports, they take some away, so there's also a slight risk there. So actually, if we can start to make the sport more professional in terms of generating public interest, commercial sponsors, things like that, it's only a good thing for hockey, and it's a good thing for everybody who plays hockey to that high level. The EHL Women's Hockey League, which is, I believe, introduced in 2020, again, is a really good step forward. So the men's equivalent already exists, and I think the women's one has just been a long time coming in terms of the equality there. The game has just as much attention, both men's and women's, so I think this is a really, really good progression in terms of that sense.
So for listeners who might not know, Joe Hunter's husband is also a national team member, a goalie, is that correct? That's the position?
That's correct, he's a goalkeeper.
So again, so first tell me his name, and then I want to know, who's more competitive, you or him?
Okay, so his name is George Pinner. He's the men's England and Great Britain goalkeeper, and also co-captain of the team. In terms of who's more competitive, now, in terms of hockey, we're actually quite good. We're generally just more supportive of each other. Anything outside of hockey, incredibly competitive. Table tennis, Scrabble, anything like that. I possibly am the sore loser in the relationship. There was one holiday when we were playing table tennis and I lost and poured a glass of water over his head, which was quite childish and immature. So yeah, we're incredibly competitive outside of hockey, but when it comes to hockey and representing England and Great Britain, we're just incredibly supportive of each other. And actually, it's a great support mechanism because each one of you knows what the other one's doing and what they're going through. And it also, sometimes when the emotions get the better of you in hockey, it's quite good to have that head of reason who also understands it, being able to give that word of advice, things like that.
So if someone's listening to this podcast and maybe they have, you know, two things that they think they're really good at and are really important to them, but they know they're going to take a lot of time, it seems like right now you're able to manage those two things that are important to you, which are professional life and a professional sporting life. What advice might you give to someone trying to balance those things?
The way I've always looked at it is that I've always had personal aspirations and career aspirations, and I've never wanted one to limit the other. And I think because that's the way I've sort of viewed it in my head, so to speak, the two have always had equal kind of motivation for myself to achieve well in both. The advice I would give would be to never give up on one for the other. I obviously do appreciate I'm in a very, very unique situation. I've got incredibly supportive employers. I've also managed to get to the level that I am in hockey. But I do think that it is possible, no matter what your hobby is. It could be sporting related, it could be musical, theatrical. The list is endless. And I just strongly believe that if you really, really enjoy the two, that you just keep striving. It's very important to have open communication with either managers, employers, the coach in my situation, and that level of transparency actually not only builds trust within your relationships, but it also makes it easier when you come to those tricky conversations, such as the one that I had when I asked to reduce my working hours. So that's something that's certainly imperative. Of course, the no-brainers are things like organisation, time management, being prepared, that sort of thing. But I think, naturally, if you do have another interest outside a career, those things you get to grips with and you experience that often. So as long as you have those things sorted, they're kind of the fundamentals almost. And then if you make those relationships and build them, and if you just strive for it, I totally think it's possible to achieve both personal and career aspirations and keep the two running side by side.
Jo, this has been an excellent conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's been great to talk to you.
Again, that was Jo Hunter. If her dreams come true, you will see her playing for Team GB in the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo. For more podcast episodes, visit fm-magazine.com/podcast or find us on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, or Google Play.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the association, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The association, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to and assume no responsibility for the content or application of the material contained herein and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.